Hello, I'm Pauline Jennings. Welcome to Musician Talk. My guest today is powerhouse singer extraordinaire Faith Allwelling. Sought out as a soloist since the age of 12 in and around her home of Durand, Wisconsin, you can now hear her sing with her band Left Wing Bourbon, with the New Orleans funk group Jambalaya, and hear her sing, play percussion and guitar with her trio Little Wing. She commands the stage no matter who she's singing with, and her soulful improv stylings are inspired. She's generous on and off stage, and I'm so pleased to have her on Musician Talk. It's time to find out more. Let's talk with Faith Allwelling. Welcome to Musician Talk, Faith.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. I've known Faith for a handful of years. I met her through Steve and a band that he has, Jambalaya. And the first time I heard you sing, Faith, I was just awed. I think my jaw hit the ground. So,
God.
One of my favorite singers, you are.
Oh my gosh. I'm verklempt.
All right. Well, with that verklemptness, let's just dig right into your musical journey. You started performing pretty young. And before that, do you remember like your first experience with music or playing music or singing or your dad playing? What are your first memories?
You know, my uncle was in a band and my dad played harmonica with him, and my grandparents and my uncles were in like a quartet. My mother was a vocalist. I was always shy, really terribly shy, and like a terrible public speaker. But if I could like get a microphone, even as like a 6-year-old kid, or pretend I had a microphone and sing things in front of people or dance, like I felt comfortable. So I guess, yeah, it's always been a part of my life.
Is there a difference between having a mic and being a speaker for an event or having a mic and getting to sing?
I could not. This right now is terrifying for me.
Right. Well, I'm so sorry to terrify you, but I promise I'll be nice and gentle. What can I say? All right. So basically music was just surrounded you as a child.
For sure.
And did you sing in choirs in elementary school? Did you do anything through the schools with your singing?
I did have a lot of solos in growing up. And then, interestingly, I got kicked out of choir as a freshman, flunked and kicked out for laughing too much, I guess. And so,
No, so really?
It goes. Yeah, that's how that went. But in college, I sang in the choir. And that was an amazing experience. Like, incredible.
What college did you go to?
UW Stout.
Menominee. And why was it incredible?
Something about voices together, just like vocal ensembles that are good. And everybody in there had to try out. So everybody was at a pretty high level. And so just like, and it's always been that way for me. Voices harmonizing is like, I cry. I can't even, just like the wetness just comes down my face. I cry right now thinking about it.
I totally understand that. Those harmonizing voices, that's what gets me too. And that's the kind of music I love to listen to. All right. So let's take a step back. You're performing solos around the area that you grew up in, starting pretty young. How do people know about you? How do people know about your voice? How do people know you're any good?
I still don't know if they do.
I mean, oh, they do, Faith. They trust me.
I don't know. For me, anyways, every day it's like, oh, should I keep doing this? Like, do people actually like this? Or is this me liking this? And, you know, and then is it okay for just me to like it to continue?
Well, I can answer that for you. This is an easy answer. And there are, it's not just you. I think that probably the people that hear you sing are in awe of your talent. And so you could just put that to bed, put it to rest, those thoughts that it's just you, because you are a gift to those of us who can listen to you sing.
Well, see, now that'll keep me going for the next month or two.
There you go. Good. I'm glad to be of service. But people were asking you to solo. They wouldn't have asked you as a solo as a child if you weren't any good. And so being so shy and, like you said, getting up in front of people with the microphone and you know you're going to sing was an okay experience for you. While you were doing these solos in your formative years, I guess in your maybe middle school years, did you gain some more confidence?
Yeah. You know, once you start,
yeah,
you know, before the starting, oh my gosh, you know, it's just nerves and nerves and nerves. But then once you're in there and you know what you're doing, it all goes away. And yeah, it's like the best medicine.
Right, right. Everything. And your dad played harmonica and you did some gigs with him when you were in high school.
He started taking us down to the open jam at the blues club in Durand when I was about 15. And he'd sit in with those guys and I'd just listen and just close my eyes. And I just found it to be like it spoke to me. Like the blues spoke to me when, I don't know, just hearing that music live. It got in me and it talked to me and it made me feel like I could talk. And I guess so from there, I joined a band with my father when I was like 18, playing drums. And he played harmonica and with Tim Caswell and a guitar player named Jason Kiesler. And so we just did this fun little thing for a while. I would say my dad is probably my biggest influence musically.
And influence in what way?
Music was always playing, you know, in the house, and he was always playing along to music. And we had a drum set growing up. So, and guitars around and pianos around, and he just played great records. I just loved the music that he played. And a lot of it was like just old school, off the wall stuff that a lot of people, you know, you just don't hear it around much.
And I would say that about your voice, particularly when you sing the blues. There is a nugget of classic, old-fashioned kind of blues singers, but you bring a modern twist to it, I guess I would say. I mean, you know how to bend a note like nobody else, I swear to God.
Oh, bless your face.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so you were playing drums. I did not know this. Maybe I knew it and forgot, but you were playing drums then in this band of your dad. Were you also singing lead?
I was just like background vocals. I sang like a couple tunes. I don't know. I guess I didn't figure out that that's really what I wanted to do at that point in time. I was just happy somebody let me play drums, to be honest, and let me be in some kind of fun band.
When did you first realize, A, that you are a lead singer? How about that one? When did that realization come?
I had some buddies that were in a band, and my brother was in the band as well. And they were called West Side Experience back in the day. And I used to go to their shows and they let me get up and sing a song or two. And like just the reaction that I got, like the energy that I received from the crowd, like made me realize, oh my gosh, I really, really enjoy this. Like this is making me feel really great and they're feeling really great. And so at that, I guess, I think that is when, after that band ended, I thought, well, I'm going to take a stab at it and form Left Wing Bourbon. I was in, I think, like 2008, maybe, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's when I became the lead singer. And I guess that's what I wanted to do from henceforth.
The nerves that you had for getting on stage and taking the step from being somebody that's called up and you get all that great feeling of being on stage. But was it just that gave you the courage to take the step to have your own band and front a band? Because that's a lot. That's a huge difference between, you know, coming up for a song and being responsible for singing a whole evening worth of material.
I always knew that I could do it, even when I wasn't doing it. And like I said, I've always kind of been a performer in some facet or another. You know, I used to like tell jokes to people, you know, and get an audience that way. It was always something that I knew, like, there was going to be a time when I came back to that. And so after the first band, just playing drums, I went off and got my degree and did the whole army thing and got all the living, responsible living out of the way, so to say.
Right. I'll get the responsible living done in my 20s. That's what you do.
And now for the fun part. Right. And so, yeah.
I love that idea. You flip, kind of do the responsible stuff early so that the rest of your life you can just have some fun.
That's what I figured.
So you mentioned Army. What prompted you to join the Army?
You know, I came from a military family and, you know, I actually wanted to do the Peace Corps. But either way, I needed somebody to pay for my college education. And so I just decided, well, let's try this. I like digging holes and There's lots of foxholes to dig back then. So,
and did any of the experiences that you had while you were in the Army inform your music making or your performing?
I don't know. I guess I will say I wrote my first song that I ever recorded actually in a 5-ton, heading down to New Orleans to do like rescue missions for Katrina. But otherwise, no, it's not really a super creative place to be. You know, you meet amazing folks, and I would do it again in a heartbeat just because of those people that I still have really close relationships with. But, you know, other than that, you know, you can write good songs due to your experience. But I wouldn't say the experience furthered my creativity in that way.
Sure. That totally makes sense. Yeah. And this was in your 20s?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how did you write it? I mean, did you have a guitar in that 5-ton with you?
Nope. I had a really, really jiggly pen because of the 5-ton and some paper. And it came to me like sort of all at once, strangely. Yeah, I don't know. Not very many songs come like that. I get that happens to a lot of folks, but not me often. And that was my first one, and it just all came with they come with the drum beat and the lyrics. I play guitar, but not, I play like rhythm guitar just to help out my lead guitar player in a trio. But that's like the extent of my guitar playing. So it's drums, really.
Well, that's interesting that you start with the groove, with the beat. When does the melody come?
If the whole song comes to me, or the most of the song comes to me, then it comes with a melody. It's already there. But typically, I will start, like, it'll start with a riff. And I'll usually write with my brother Jacob, who is a bass player. And he's like a riff king. So he just said these great riffs. We'll pick one of those riffs and we'll just kind of, we'll make a groove. We'll find the groove from that riff. And then we'll start adding instruments. And really, like, the lyrics come last, typically, because like for me, the sound of music, even without any vocals or lyrics whatsoever, is what moves me more than anything. At all, strangely, I guess. But so I can't write a song until I know what that song wants to be, I guess, if that makes sense. So typically get that out there and then be like, well, what does this feel like? What does this make me feel like? What is this song about? And then I have a notebook of different lines and things that I, you know, you think of something and you got to write it down. And then I go in there, pull a line that feels like the song. And then I'll write the song from basically usually like one line or something.
That is really a cool way to write a song. So you start with the lick, boom, 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 or whatever it happens to be. I did it low because Jacob's with you on the bass.
Yeah. Well,
and then you take that from there because you let that riff and what you kind of develop around that riff to speak to you about what the song should be about. I love that. That's just crazy. It's crazy that it works that way because it sounds a little magical to me, you know, that the song is speaking to you.
Everything I do is really for better or worse. And sometimes it is worse based off feeling. And so I have a really hard time forcing anything ever. It just has to be organic. And I think that's what makes it good for me. Like, I couldn't be a Nashville studio musician. No way. Like, I could never really do something like that.
Why? What part of it do you think you couldn't do?
I can't do like repetition. I'm really bad at doing what somebody wants me to do or what they're looking for. Cause I have a hard time overcoming what music wants me to do, I guess. And so I find it really hard to box in something that somebody really wants.
Right. Here's the part. Sing this part, sing these notes and over and over and over again.
Yeah. I can do it. But maybe once or twice, and then I'm so often left field going, what? I'd be off, like, well, what? That feels like it wants to be here. That's what it wants to do, you know? So I really think those people are amazing, and maybe someday I can grow up and figure out how to be one of them.
Yeah. You know, but Faith, I have to say, this is one of the reasons I love your voice so much and what you do and your talent is because of your improv. It's astounding. And it is amazing that every time I hear you do a song, it is different because it's not just what the sound, I don't think, is of the song is speaking to you. It's also what emotion you happen to be feeling at that time. And every time you enter a song, you're entering it with a little bit of a different feeling in your heart
right.
at that time. Yeah,
exactly.
And we can hear some of your improv singing here on the first song that we're going to play, which is called The Wrong Pour. So who wrote this song and when did you write it? Kind of just set up the song for us, if you would.
So I wrote this song and I worked on it with Tim Caswell in the studio to come up with like sort of the piano parts and whatever. But I had the words and the drum part in my head. So I played the drum part and then the words and the rest like kind of just came out. But this song it's a song that came out of working in hospitality for my whole life.
Okay.
And so it's like an ode to bartenders.
Nice.
It's just from like years of observing both customer and bartender behavior and interaction with one another. and it's because it's a hard business
yes.
to be in. And you can be like specifically kind of tough to bartend in rural Wisconsin. You gotta be tough as nails to excel at it. And I think like even the best bartender will eventually end up like sassily bemused at the circumstance they find themselves in.
Right.
And you know, so the song is about like the territory, I guess, of the relationship between the customer, the local customer, and the bartender.
Okay, nice. Yep. And it's kind of the groove of it is kind of classic blues.
Flat tire beat, yep. Classic groove.
What's it called?
It's like a flat tire beat. Sort of like a kirk clunk, chirk clunk, cha-chunk, cha-chunk, cha-chunk. And just thinking
flat
about like
tire beat. Oh, Faith, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really, I really love listening to this song and how it builds. If you listen to the chorus and how there's a part you're singing for the chorus as the song starts. So then as you get kind of three quarters of the way into the song, then you start taking off on that chorus. And I'm just like, yes. Oh yeah. That's just perfect. So people listen to that, how it just builds with that. And
this,
you're tasty. And we'll talk about this when we talk about the quote of how this, and maybe it's ineffable and it's something you can't describe, but how you do this, how you improvise so well. You got to have a lot of confidence. You have a lot of courage, I think, to do that. So who is playing on this track?
So this would be Jacob Allwilling on bass, Tim Caswell on keyboards, Nancy Long on drums, and John Neitz on guitar. And Sue Orfield on saxophone.
With that said, let's listen to The Wrong Pour, this original song written by my guest today, Faith Allwilling, and her band, Left Wing Bourbon, with a couple friends. And here it is.
A man walked into the bar, just wanted to get off the road for a while. Before he could get too far, a man said, "You ain't local and you pretty lame. Meet us at a range, ain't that our place today? So how thirsty are you? As if you want a drink, man. You gotta be drinking what she's pouring.
Drinking what she's pouring.
You gotta be drinking what she's pouring.
Drink just what she's pouring.
You gotta be drinking what she's pouring. If you don't, you're gonna be thirsty for a while. Bartender had the word no for a smile. Good luck getting served, taking orders ain't her style. She got
ankles for shoes,
and you always lose her. You ain't local and you pretty lame. Readers in a rage, and you let up once today. So how thirsty are you? As if you want a drink, then you gotta be drinking what she's pouring. You gotta be drinking what she's pouring. You gotta be drinking what she's pouring. If you don't, The man with a question mark for a face. Cry. Good Lord, can I get a drink in this damn place?
Peter ripped her head around,
left her shoes in the same place. She said, you ain't an awful and you pretty lame. I've been in a race and let off once today. So how thirsty are you? See if you want a drink there. You gotta be drinking when I'm pouring.
Drinking
you gotta be drinking when I'm pouring.
Drinking
you gotta be drinking when I'm pouring. If you don't, you're gonna be thirsty for a while. I said you gotta be drinking when I'm pouring. I said you gotta be drinking when I'm pouring. I said you gotta be drinking just when I'm pouring, baby. If you don't, you're gonna be thirsty for a while. You better try.
This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. You just heard my guest today, Faith Owelling, sing the heck out of her original song called The Wrong Pour. Yeah, folks, did you hear that improvising at the end? And you get those high notes coming, and everybody loves when singers sing those high notes and you hold them. And it's so much fun. So much fun. Great band. Love the end hits.
That's a fun one.
So that was Left Wing Bourbon we heard. And there's different iterations of Left Wing Bourbon, but it's almost always you and Jacob and Tim.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you have with Tim also a duo, usually a duo, I believe, in Little Wing.
That is now a trio most of the time with Kari Larson on stand-up bass. And
nice.
It's really, really fun. And then we get to do more old school jazz stuff. And I love that because I get to play percussion and sing and play guitar, and I love big band stuff, and I love performing on stage with big bands, but there's something about that duo or trio situation in which you can actually hear yourself as a female singer really well.
Right.
And you can take advantage of that and go places that you aren't normally able to travel, because as you and I both know, as performers, if you can't hear yourself, it really restricts your confidence in where you want to go.
I couldn't. Exactly. I mean, I'm a little speechless because you're speaking such truth there. And, you know, I've said this during the show too, how the importance of a sound person, and people that aren't in the business don't really know how, it doesn't matter how good you are. If you don't have a good sound person, you're not going to sound very great. And also the other flip side of that is you're not going to be able to hear yourself and have what you need to hear. And seriously, folks, when you are in front of a monitor that is, you can hear crisp and clear your voice, and they have little effects on it, so it sounds a little good. It sounds really, really good to you. The confidence in your singing in a second can go up. And the opposite, right, when you can't.
It's just night and day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you want to pull your hair out if you can't hear. I mean, you're just singing to get by kind of at that point. Right. I just got to get to the song because I can't really perform it because I can't hear.
And that takes the whole point of it away.
And I want to say with Little Wing, I love this. Okay. So Faith said that she gets to play percussion during it. And I don't know if you do this every time, but it's just delightful. She comes up with the empty beer box box, I guess it is a 12 pack box with her brushes.
Yeah.
Rest that on her lap, and remind me, do you have a little hi-hat or something that you're playing with your foot, or maybe a tambourine on the floor or something else?
I got a hi-hat and a bass box and a and all kinds of little tambourines and, you know, shakers and kielbasas and whatnot, whatever's around.
While you're singing,
yeah.
you're doing all this extraneous stuff with your limbs and playing different things. And then sometimes she'll move that 12-pack box and her brushes aside and pick up her guitar. And she wigs it around. And there she is now singing with the guitar. It's pretty fun to watch you play.
It's so fun to do, really.
You're also playing in Jambalaya. And that's a bigger band. And you guys do pretty complicated music. And it's not vocally easy either.
Yeah, I feel really honored and lucky to be with those guys because everybody in that band is just a boss. Oh, they're so, like, some of the most incredible musicians I've ever met, and I get to sing songs with them. But that music is really complicated.
And it's like Little Feet and who else? What other bands do you cover in Jambalaya?
Well, a lot of Little Feet, because that band came out of a Little Feet tribute show. Yeah. So we had a lot of Little Feet music, and then there's some like New Orleans funk, like Meters, little, like John Cleary, some of the old faces like Rod Stewart.
We'll move on to our quote of the week, which is Etta James, another powerhouse, incredible improviser. And she said, "My mother always told me, even if a song has been done 1,000 times, you can still bring something of your own to it. I'd like to think I did that." Well, and she so did, obviously. And that's what I think of you. It's like you bring something new. And so my question is, how much is your brain involved in those decisions when you're on stage and you're improvising?
Oh my gosh, almost none.
Yeah.
Thinking really, really gets in the way of making magic. So for me, as soon as I have to think about that, it all can go away real quick. And then you gotta come back and find it. Like, I consider myself a soul singer, and I'm a feel-based human, like I said. So I don't know. It's just in me, I feel like, and the song can pull it out of me. I don't know that I'm consciously doing that.
I think that's what you call natural talent. I mean, seriously. And I understand that whole thing about thought getting in the way. Because almost you feel like it, when thought comes in, doubt comes in somehow. Of what you're going to do next, at least for me sometimes. Like, oh, that next note, what should that be? Oh, I'm not going to hit the right one. And I mean, that thought, of course, comes and goes in just a blink of an eye. But somehow when you bring the thought in, you can start to question yourself then.
I remember the first and only time I've ever hit Zen completely and to know what that is and to be able to like, oh my God, that's what they meant. And that was singing. And I wasn't in my body. I wasn't a human, and I was basically the song. And I think thoughts are just kind of obstacles in that regard. Yeah. And so it doesn't serve you to be thinking. You've got to be feeling, you know?
So it's a meditation of sorts. When you say Zen, yeah, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it really is.
How do you learn a song?
I listened to it several times. To get the bones of it down, and then I'll play drums to it several times so that I know, like, I basically like to have the rhythm, the bass and the drums in my head really well. So I know I know the structure of that song, you know, then the lyrics, you know, that's the last thing I learned, but the melody, you learn the melody and then you learn the phrasing and then that's where I like might take my liberties with phrasing. Typically is where I might phrase something a little differently or feel something a little differently. Like they're like, oh, this portion of the song feels way more sassy to me than what the band's doing. And so like, let's jazz that up or like, let's hit that big or something, you know? And then, and so as far as learning a song, you kind of make a new one sometimes, like most of the times, I mean, the same song, but it's, you know, you're doing something new to it or you're interpreting it in a different way.
And
but
so
repetition part of that.
Repetition.
But not too much. You got to be a healthy amount because if you overplay that song or if you overlisten to the song, then you can box yourself into that song. And then what are you doing with it? And why are you really performing it if you can't spin it a way that makes more sense to you?
So repetition, not too much repetition, because you don't want to get boxed in and have that voice in your head so strongly that all of a sudden your own instincts are maybe fighting that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well and, said.
Thank you. And then not too much repetition, but it sounds like you know that song really, really, really well. You know that song so you well enough that you can stray from it.
Exactly. You know where the bones of that song are going, then you know that song well enough, I feel like. And the rest is your interpretation after that.
Nice. I didn't really ask you after I said the quote, when you first read that quote, what came to mind?
Actually, I just started thinking about Etta James and how badass she is when I read that quote.
Was she a big influence on your singing, do you think?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yes, I kind of figured. Love that. I just think, you know, if you can't put your own stank on it, why are you doing it?
Yeah, you know? I totally agree with you for what you do. I'm just in the throes of putting together a tribute band.
Oh, yeah.
And with those, you really want to stay true because the people are coming to see, hear usually what they remember. And so you don't really want to put your own spin on it because that's not the purpose in that. And so there's a purpose for and a place for all these different kind of things. When you're singing the blues, R&B, the funk, New Orleans funk stuff that you're doing, you're a perfect fit because of the talents, the unique talents that you have.
Yep. That's why I'm like not so good at the things you are great at, for instance.
Right. Like, in musical theater. I mean, you sing the song a certain way.
You have to be on note for note. You have to know what you're doing. Oh my gosh.
The next song we want to talk about is Moon Man. And did you write this one as well?
I did.
And what was the inspiration for it, my dear?
So this song is just about people who are like desperately looking for love and the risks that they're willing to take versus a reward. I guess in this particular song, she takes a risk and it's a ridiculous one, but it pans out for her in the end. It's not always the case.
Right, right.
And you got to work hard sometimes and really walk off a cliff and just trust that someone's going to catch you on the other side.
And this is also Left Wing Bourbon performing this on this recording.
Yep.
And this is this also has a little bit of a classic feel for a barn burner torch ballads, blues ballad. It's so emotional. You do that.
It's a little gospel-y for sure.
Yeah.
I know. Which
maybe that's the thing. It more has that a gospel blues, I guess. I think that when people can improvise really well, they also have a tendency to be able to bring emotion into their singing more than perhaps others. Because when you feel that emotion, it's reflected in what you're doing in your improv. Of course, all musical theater, and there's a lot of emotion there, and you can totally bring that emotion to the notes that you're supposed to be singing and, you know, where you're supposed to be singing them. But there's something about the way, and I said this earlier, the way that you bend notes that just, your heart just gets wrapped up in what you're doing.
Well, it makes me so happy to hear that.
When you're in the studio, as opposed to on stage, how is the inspiration different? The feelings different, or isn't it for you?
Oh boy. Yeah. I'm really not a studio person. It's really, I've done a lot of studio work for people, but I'm never satisfied with it, to be honest. Without a live thing happening and singing to tracks, I really lose a lot. And I know that that's an area that I need to get better at.
This is not a live recording of Moon Man.
That we all played in the studio together.
You did.
So, and then, you know, I go back and overdub the vocals if they're not good. But again, I'm not super happy with any of these songs as opposed to playing them live. I mean, they're fine, but...
Well, are we ever really completely happy with our performance? When it's live, it's there and it's gone. And you feel good about the performance, but when you have to listen to every note on a recording, it's hard to be completely fine with it because it's... Yeah.
No, I cannot watch myself or listen to myself after the fact. It's just like excruciating sometimes. I'm just like, oh no, what? Ugh, why? No, I see all the things that I could have done better, you know? So I don't typically do that.
Even though you weren't interacting with an audience, this song is incredibly emotion filled and wonderfully performed and done by you. So let's take a listen.
Thank
to
you.
You're welcome. So let's take a listen to Moon Man, a song written by my guest today, Faith Elwelling.
I saw him standing on the moon. I could feel him before I knew his name. My friends told me to be careful. Said you just got yourself back to life. Don't go giving everything you got. Don't put your head on the chopping block, 'cause you don't know him. You don't know me. Many days passed, sun went up, sun went down, walking the same old hours, acting wild. But I can never get him out of my mind. I swear that I could feel him. Can you believe it hurts so bad? I haven't cried, 'cause I don't. long way. No.
This is Musician Talk, and I'm your host, Pauline Jennings. My guest today is Faith Elwelling. You just heard her vocal stylings on her original tune called Moon Man. Yeah, those notes. Oh my God, some of those notes that you hit on in this song are really, really powerful. Well done. Did you have any challenges recording this or singing it when you were recording it, other than the fact that you didn't have an audience there to perform with?
That whole record was a bit of a challenge. We did it at Caswell Studios, which isn't really a real studio per se, and we had no budget. We were doing the recording on old analog, super old equipment, and just kind of with the start-stop to patch in and out for any mistakes or notes or this or that. And it was a bit painstaking, and I guess those were the challenges that came along with every song on the album.
Yeah, that whole punching in thing with the old analog reel tape, actually reel to reel, right? Amazes me. Amazes me that some of those, particularly the progressive rock bands that are really complicated songs, or something just like Bohemian Rhapsody, how did they do it? How did they possibly do it? Because when with electronic stuff, you just go in and highlight it with your marker, with your cursor, and you could just put it wherever you want it. You can move it. You can do everything that you want with it just on your computer, what you're saying. So if I came in a little late on a phrase, you could just go in there and move it electronically. And back when it was analog, you had to do it again. And they,
oh my God, it's just so complicated. Beat it. Oh yeah, I know. After hours and hours, it's just, then you kind of, you can't even see in front of your face anymore, and you can't tell a note from another note, and it's just like recording blind or something.
It's amazingly more difficult than doing it electronically. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Best gig, worst gig. You got something for me, Faith?
Oh, man. I have a terrible memory, and I've played thousands of gigs, but I will say that definitely the best gigs are when we have a great sound technician, a great venue that sounds great, and a great audience. And really, if those three things are there, it's magic. Off the top of my head, we did this Alma art show outside last year, and oh, the sound was great, and everybody could hear everything, and so we were able to come together and have these great musical moments that we don't typically have, as you know, when you can't hear each other. So that gig was amazing. And it's always very fun to do blues fests of any kind, even if you can't hear yourself at them. They're fun because the crowd is just so into it, and it's so fun. But I would say the worst gigs are always the ones where you either don't have a sound guy, or the venue sounds terrible and you don't have a sound guy.
Right.
Or the crowd is just like not the crowd for your band.
Right.
Like I remember doing this one show. I don't know what the people were really into, but it was not funky blues, certainly, because even one of the guys came up on our break and he was like, I don't care for these. Nobody plays real instruments in your band. And
what?
And he's saying that to our saxophone player, and she's going, what?
It's a fake instrument?
He said something entirely witty back to him that I can't. Now you cannot repeat, but but that was a doozy of a show to get through. Just having people looking at you like, what is this?
I can't help you with this. I can't help you. This is what we play.
Of course, we've had the bar gigs with like the drunken women that are falling over on your things and giving you bloody lips because they run into your microphone, and your microphone goes into your teeth, and your teeth goes into your lip.
I think you have more experiences definitely when you're playing 4-hour bar gigs. You brought up blues festivals, and you are one of the people that puts together Blues on the Chippewa. When does that usually take place?
That is the first weekend of August, and it is free. You know, we raise money for the elementary and middle and high school band programs. And
nice. And it, where is it at?
Durand.
Durand, Wisconsin, yes. And I highly encourage people to keep that in mind, jot it down, Blues on the Chippewa. It's not only do you have great bands, it's just every year the crowd just seems to be so happy to be there. You know?
That is the thing. Everybody, it's like a big old love fest.
So that's a lot of fun. And also I want to mention your restaurant. You're a co-owner of a restaurant called Hop Dish and Vine, which is a restaurant in Stockholm. And I've eaten there, I don't know, a handful of times, four or five times, maybe every single time. It's an incredible meal.
It's farm to table and organic, and it comes. So whatever is available from the local farmers is what I have to, you know, kind of figure out what I'm going to do with and create something new every day. And that's my other creative outlet in this life is cooking. So that's super fun.
You're not going to find something on your menu that you'll find at many other restaurants ever anywhere. So that makes it a very fun experience. And it's tucked into this nice little courtyard amongst shops. And it's got a beautiful ambiance. And so I highly recommend if you're in that area at all, stop in Stockholm at Hop Dish and Vine for lunch in the summer or dinner.
Yes, please totally do.
Yes.
Please totally do.
All right, back to the music. Can people find your schedule and your music?
Well, you can go on littlewingmusic.org or Left Wing Bourbon on Facebook, and gigs will be up as they come, and music is up on those sites, and I'll be in your neck of the woods.
Yes.
At Northfield Event Center. And
at the Grand Event Center. If you're local, it just goes by the Grand. So now you know. You're in the know.
Mm-hmm. We're in the inn.
Yes, at the Grand on April 1st. And what time is that gig?
So that is at 7. Duo is going to do an opening set. And then I am performing with Rush River Delta, a friend of mine's band. And I just do a little vocal work for him here and there. He's a great songwriter. So come on out, check out his music.
That was kind of my motivation to have you on the show. I've been wanting to talk to you on Musician Talk forever because I just love what you do. And this was the perfect opportunity since you had a gig coming up here where people could come out and see you. And please do it. Yeah, you just get more of what you already heard. And our time is up, Faith.
Thank you for having me. I adore you. And I love that you do this for musicians. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I adore you too, my dear. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Many, many thanks to Faith for sharing her musical journey and incredible voice with us today. Thanks always to Wendy Nordquist and to you, dear listener, for tuning in to Musician Talk on the One, KYMN. Have a wonderful day.